Good evening, this is Paul Edwards from Miami, Florida, and welcome to a somewhat spontaneous version of Tuesday Topics. I'd like to thank our producer, Brian Charlson, and our recorder, editor, Steve Bauer, and of course, all of the participants who are going to make this show the exciting, spontaneous, and chaotic animal that it always is. Obviously, we'd also like to thank George Byes of Talking Communities, who has provided us with the software that enables us to record Tuesday Topics every Tuesday. Tonight, we did not publish an announcement in advance, therefore, we're very much operating with kind of the luck of the draw in terms of the folks who were here. But it occurred to us that it might be interesting to try to do a program that would enable people who are blind or visually impaired to talk about the techniques that they have developed for getting holiday shopping done. Do blind people tend to use the internet more than the average bear or less? How do they deal with going into crowded stores? Do they leave their guide dogs at home? How do they do in terms of getting the assistance they need from stores? These are some of the exciting questions that we'll get an opportunity to talk about on tonight's program. And also, perhaps, we'll get an opportunity to talk about some cool sites and some not-so-cool sites that people have found that have made holiday shopping either fun or a pain. So let's start with the question, perhaps, of online shopping. Is there anyone here who has done some online shopping for the holidays who would like to talk a little about the experience?
Well, I really like Amazon because, well, for one thing, it has many things, and also it keeps your address book so that you can ship things to multiple addresses, and it keeps a record of who you shipped to, and you're able to keep track of your orders. It sends you a bunch of emails so you know where everything is. And I just really like the fact that sometimes you can't remember some family member's address, and Amazon keeps it once you put it in there.
Excellent. I forgot to mention in my introduction that it's really good for folks to actually say who they are and where they're from. And I think that's Matthew from, Arizona, I think, Matthew. Amazon. Some people think it's really accessible. Some people think it's not. What's your experience been like, Matthew? Do you find Amazon a pretty easy website to you?
I'm sorry, yes, I neglected to say that. Yes, this is Matthew from Phoenix, Arizona. This is Matthew Bullos from Phoenix, Arizona. And it is a rather cluttered website, at least at the top. And it has many links that really aren't labeled. But once you, like, for instance, if you're buying a book for somebody, I like the fact that in the search box, you can pull it down to the word books, and then you can type part of the title and part of the author in the edit field. And it will pull it up, and it'll say, here's the most relevant result. And you just use, at least, to skip down a bunch of text and words and things, I use the control down arrow to skip paragraph to paragraph. And once you've got everything set up, it works fairly well. It is a cluttered website, but once you get used to it, it's fine.
Have you tried using the Amazon.com/access approach, Matthew?
No, I looked at it, and it just didn't. I don't know if it didn't offer the same thing. I just find it fine to use the regular website. I kind of have a feeling that the access thing was put up by people who didn't really know the exact needs, and they did it to, I don't know the story behind that, but I just use the regular Amazon website. And if you're in Canada, it's Amazon.ca, and there's Amazon.co.uk, but I don't know the accessibility of those sites.
They're about the same. I've used Amazon, and I'm actually kind of the same opinion as Matthew. I don't like the access link. The approach that they take is to unclutter the website and have, but they end up also providing you with a lot less information. And it may actually take longer to get things done from the access site. I know that Brian Charlson is with us, and I wanted to ask Brian if he has played with Amazon lately, because there was a period in in the history of Jaws, where Jaws was not working well with Amazon. As far as you know, Brian, are the problems that Jaws and Amazon had communicating with each other pretty much over with?
Yeah, I've heard no complaints from any of my clients lately. I happen not to be that fond of Amazon generally, so I don't use it myself. But we do train people at the Carroll Center to use Jaws, and Amazon is one of the sites people always want to learn to navigate, and there hasn't been a problem there as of late. That's from Jaws 6.4 on. I think it's been pretty good. Definitely in 7.0, 7.1, and now 8.0.
The one thing I really like about Amazon is that, especially for used books or used CDs, it'll say 31 copies used for from $3. So that means that $3 and up, they're used. So you just go through, you click on that link, and you read the descriptions. You know, case is broken or shelf wear, and you decide, no, I don't want that. I'll pay a little more for something that says sealed. So I really like the fact that you can buy a lot of things used, and it'll tell you still in good condition or perfect condition.
Some of us would really like to use eBay, and I guess I'd like to at least put in a plug for eBay's little brother, which is a site that I use quite a lot. It's a site called half.com, and half.com operates very much the same way as the used section of Amazon does, except their prices tend often to be lower than are available for some components of Amazon, and particularly with regard to some unusual CDs that Amazon either doesn't have or typically is selling at pretty high prices as used CDs. Half.com seems to have some more of these. And it's an interesting concept because what Half.com does is it actually uses a pretty substantial portion of the eBay client base, but allows you to use credit cards rather than relying on PayPal. And you can use a credit card for the whole order, and eBay, which runs half.com, essentially does all the processing, and the CDs, which is what I tend to buy from there, just tend to kind of flow in. The other thing is they have a huge number of paperback books for extremely low prices, as does Amazon.com in some of their used stuff. So that's another option in terms of shopping that is a pretty accessible website. It's pretty easy to use, and as Matthew says, you can look at various prices in various conditions, and ratings of the purchasers also occur. So it's kind of a cool site if you're looking for CDs or looking for books as part of your holiday stuff. Someone else like to talk about another online place that they've shopped at?
Brian from Watertown, Massachusetts. One of the things that I found with online shopping in general, and I'll mention a site or two in the process, is that virtually all of them, you're best off trying to get good at a few of them rather than spreading yourself out pretty thin. When I talk about doing shopping, I really don't intend to spend the entire evening trying to find a website that is accessible to me that has a specific book or CD or brand of honey-baked ham or type of chocolates or whatever to be shipped to my family members in the holiday season. So I try to stick with two or three sites and really become good at them rather than attempting to try to take my skills at web browsing and dealing with online forms of varying levels of accessibility. So we do a lot of our shopping on eBay. We don't spend too much of our time worrying about the part of eBay where you're actually in a bid process. We actually go in and look for purchases where you can buy it now as opposed to participate in that other auctioning kind of process. For us, that simply means that we get our shopping done faster. The quality is as good as if you went to individual websites, but you got a single interface to deal with, single kind of billing to deal with. You develop a good history with the company, and that does well for you elsewhere.
One thing I wanted to say was that once you're familiar with a site like Amazon or Half.com, if you're buying, like for instance, CDs or books, and you're having them all shipped to the same address, spend a little time on the first CD and look at the different sellers and just kind of remember them in your head, whether it's Books 101 or Best Books, whatever the seller name is, and just keep those in the back of your mind. Then look for your next CD or book and see if you can match up and have it the same seller so that you can save on shipping. There's another website. This is a totally different topic now, and it's very accessible, this website, and it's for those people on your shopping list who have everything or who have odd taste. This website has all sorts of weird computer gadgets. It's a website called ThinkGeek.com, just how it sounds, ThinkGeek.com, and they have all sorts of computer things. They have caffeinated candy. It's best just to browse through their categories and just order a bunch of stuff. There's no way I can think of all the stuff that they have, but they have stuff that nobody else has, so I would recommend a look through there. There's no accessibility issues. It's perfectly fine, and you should sign up for their newsletter, but I thought I'd mention that for people who have everything and who you don't know what to get for. Look through that website. See if you can find something. I'm sure you will. You'll find stuff for yourself, too.
I have heard of ThinkGeek, and I took a quick look at it the other day, and it is one bizarre collection of things. When you think geek, you think perhaps it's all computer-related, and I guess to some degree it is. But something I bought for a coworker the other day was caffeinated lip gloss for those who simply aren't running fast enough yet with their current means of intake of caffeine. It gives them yet another way. And they have some pretty outrageous things like T-shirts and the like that really fit into that whole geek category.
Yeah, they have a new T-shirt that said, just because you're necessary doesn't mean you're important, I think it said. They have caffeinated soap so that when you're in the shower, if you're just not awakened enough, then you just use caffeinated soap. They got a caffeine products, computer products. It's just something you have to look at yourself and click on all the categories and just keep adding things to your wish list or your cart. The description, they have nice descriptions on it. So that there's nothing wrong with that site. Just go on it and look at some odd stuff that they have.
Another suggestion, and I guess I'll throw it out, it's something that I've actually been able to use quite a lot. And I found that it's a useful thing to do. And that is, obviously you can search the web using Google, but there is another thing that's operated by Google called Froogle, F-R-O-O-G-L-E. And it's a huge database that actually does allow you to actually do price comparison searches on the internet. And while there certainly is some advertising that comes up in between, and it's a pretty cluttered website, it sure does give you some idea of the range of prices that are out there for things. And it's pretty amazing how far below what you would normally associate as the retail cost of things some of these items are actually available for in a sealed mint condition. And another site that in fact my wife Cheryl was talking about is a site that's also pretty accessible and is a site where you can often save some pretty good money, which is important during the holidays, and that's a site called overstock.com. I've actually shopped there, and in addition to their website, they do have a toll-free number that you can call and shop with no penalty, and that's a kind of a cool thing. I don't remember the toll-free number, but it's pretty prominently displayed on the Overstock.com website. So that's another site that I would urge people to look for. Well, let's branch out and talk about some other stuff. We can't do all of our shopping online, and we have to end up braving the crowds at Christmas time. Does someone have some tips that they might be able to offer for how best to deal with the huge crowds in malls as a blind person and the huge crowds in stores? Is there anything you can do to make life easier for yourself as a blind person and trying to brave that sort of place.
Yeah, you make a list and you make your husband go do the shopping.
For those of you who don't know, that's Sue Amateur, the shopping curmudgeon from the state of Washington. That's a very effective approach. Actually, I have to offer an amendment, though. What you do is you make a list and you make your wife go to do the shopping. So that's the approach that you take.
I don't think so. Another thing that needs to do, at least myself, this is Cheryl from Miami. Something that I find that I do when I shop is remember that I'm not the only one shopping. And sometimes that's the most important thing that I can remember.
But how does that impact what you actually end up doing when you have to remember that you're not the only one? What does that have to do with the price of cheese? I don't quite get it.
What that has to do with the price of cheese is because one gets pushed around and shoved around pretty easily. I've run into that a lot at the mall. Even in a wide open hallway, it's amazing how that the spot that I missed happened to be the spot that the other person needs to walk down as well. So I don't know, maybe nobody else ever deals with those add-ins, but I sure do. And with using sighted guide, sometimes getting really frustrated can make the job for the sighted guide a pretty frustrating thing as well. So that's sort of where I'm from.
Well, and I think especially if you can avoid going on the weekends when the malls are packed with people and kids and carolers and everything, if there's a way you can go, you know, during the week, especially the earlier in the day. Some of the stores, of course, do have personal shoppers. They're not as many as they used to be. A lot of our folks out here participate in the Target shopping day, which I think was today, as a matter of fact. And they go at like 8 o'clock, and from 8 to 10, Target has people who assist you in doing your shopping.
That's actually something that we ought to try to publicize more, because it really is a pretty cool idea. For those of you who don't know about it, Target actually designates a particular day every year where they reach out to the disability community and have their staff available to provide assistance to people with disabilities in terms of getting their shopping done. And it's really a very, very cool idea. Let me ask another question. One of the most popular things that seems to have emerged over the past several years are gift cards. And I would be curious to know whether in this group, any other folks but me actually use those as kind of a cop-out during the holidays.
I don't know I'd call it cop-outs. I was watching the news the other night, and they were talking about the high percentage of purchase of gift cards and the number of pieces of protection laws that have come out to make sure that the gift card experience is not a one-way street. I don't think any of us can deny that we've been given gift cards that took us up to next Christmas to spend. And occasionally find that the card or envelope or whatever has been mislaid and then found, only to find out that it had expired. And a lot of things have come to our rescue to keep us from those kinds of oversights. I've also heard recently that you have to be careful when you buy gift cards, that they're packaged in such a way that the identification information is not showing. You can buy them off these store carousel kinds of things, that the identification information isn't showing, so that somebody could have written that information down, gone out and used the numbers online. And when you bought the card and got it home or gave it to somebody, you found out that its value had already been used up. So there's things you have to be careful about, but it's still a great way to give gifts with an opportunity to, in fact, enjoy them more than once. I give gift cards to restaurants and the like, and that almost guarantees me an opportunity to go out to dinner with friends, and they'll use their gift card, and I get a chance to go out and enjoy their company and dinner out as well.
Yeah, I like gift cards. I don't know about the rest of you, but the worst part about Christmas is if somebody gives you something, and then you have to take it back. So I'd rather have a gift card, and then I can go purchase what I need and make sure it fits right, or if it's something for the house that we've picked what we need versus what somebody has probably spent hours trying to figure out, gee, what do we get them? They look So I think they're handy.
Yeah, I think gift cards are a good thing. I actually also use them because if you're buying things for relatives who are in other parts of the country, I have two children in Jacksonville and another one in Virginia, and it's an awful lot easier to ship a gift card up for the whole family to use and put a value on it than it is to try to pack boxes. Of course, what you end up doing often is both, and it sort of defeats the purpose, but nevertheless. So gift cards is another option. Do people make use of a combination of online and in-store? One of the things that I did a couple of years when I had some time was to actually take a look at the websites of some of the stores that are close by, tried to get an idea of some of the things that they had that looked interesting, and then, in effect, had a list of the things that I wanted to look at by the time that I got to the store. So it was a lot easier, and I'd have item numbers and item names. And so it was actually a lot easier to do a pretty organized approach to getting through stores quickly. I am not a shopaholic. I don't love shopping, but I do like buying presents, and I do like trying to match those presents to the likes and the tastes of the person for whom I'm buying. So it's a bad combination.
There's one other thing I wanted to mention about gift cards before we get too far away from that, and that is the gift card that is non-store specific. You can now buy gift cards not just for any store in a given mall, but a chain of malls that cooperate in the purchase of a single gift card. That way you're not restricting the recipient to even a particular store or a particular restaurant. I bought a couple of cards this year that are good at any of 20 different restaurant chains. Some of them not just your everyday restaurants either. There's the Wayside Inn, the Longfellow's famous poem was all about, is on one of these gift cards. I have friends who got married out there and definitely will be taking that all-purpose gift card out there if they get transport, but we'll be able to use it at the local eatery also if that's the best that works for them. I also do some online shopping because I find the written descriptions online are frequently much more accurate than those of a harried store clerk who really doesn't have time to read you all of the information on the box when you're going out to buy a gadget or gizmo of some kind. So it really does work well to be an educated shopper by the time you get out there. And I hope we get a chance to come back and talk about how important it is to have a good friend who's willing to go shopping with you and how best to treat such friends when they're doing that rather odorous task.
Brian, that's a good point. I actually think that both Visa and MasterCard now actually sell gift cards so that you can actually buy a Visa gift card or a MasterCard gift card for whatever value you want, which is also a pretty cool thing because they're, of course, usable wherever Visa and MasterCard are accepted. Let's deal with Brian's issue, which is really a good one. Do folks go out shopping with a person who is sighted? And if so, what can you tell us about the care and feeding of such animals?
You know, this is Gary Wood from Lansing, Michigan. I don't do quite as much as I did. I used to do that with my dad sometimes, trying to get something for mother and vice versa for him. And then sometimes I might go with my brothers. I don't do that quite so much these days, but I've found that I've been doing some shopping online for some things that I've just purchased, like at Walmart.com. I got, because I had to go there because I couldn't get it in the store, the new microwave that they're talking about, the talking microwave. But I had to call because trying to learn how to use the online, but I called to order that appliance there, and I did that with the talking thermostat that I bought. But and then I'm trying to learn how to do the online banking. I got one of them Visa debit cards through my bank, you know. So that's I think a worthwhile thing to have. Takes a while to learn how to use it, but that's one way to if you have something like that to shop for goods that you might want for gifts and or for any other kind of thing.
Well, one nice thing, if you do go shopping, depending on the time of day, you know, take the person to lunch or to dinner or for drinks and hors d'oeuvres, or, you know, whatever the person's preference is. But by the time you've shopped for a few hours, your feet could probably use a rest, and you've probably become a little hungry and thirsty.
Exactly. Well, most of the people who go shopping with me, I make a point of having them be my guest for a meal. It's cheap. It's a very cheap way to get that kind of assistance, especially if you have a person who's good at helping you. I find shopping for clothes the most difficult thing. While other people are concerned about whether or not you've got the right sizes, that's something I can do a little research before I hit the stores. It's knowing the right color combinations and fabrics and this and that that is way beyond my real interest, let alone my skill level. So having a lady willing to go out and go ladies clothing shopping for me, for my wife, is very, very important. I have to learn to trust them, and there have been a couple of Christmases where I might have selected the wrong person to help me, but when you do come across one that's good at it, you really hold on to them and treat them like the treasure they are.
I would absolutely agree with that. I have someone who actually I pay a certain amount per hour to do errands and reading and that sort of thing, and that person works just as well at Christmas time. But even so, in spite of the fact that that person is getting paid, you're really employing that person's expertise and that person's goodwill when you're getting involved with Christmas shopping. Because it's not a pleasant task for someone to undertake for someone else, and it's really a blessing when you've got someone who's good at it. So Christmas shopping in the store, Christmas shopping online. What about getting ready for entertaining at Christmas? Does that have any special issues for those of us who are blind or visually impaired? And what can we do about some of that?
Well, this is Sue again. We never did Christmas because our family always lived quite a ways away. But since we moved over to this side now with all the family, last year we did our first Christmas. And boy, it was a lot of work. So we never had put up a tree or anything because we were not home at Christmas time. So we ended up getting a artificial tree because at least it had the lights on it and everything. But it was, you know, a bit tricky. I don't know how other people feel, but I hate to have everybody in my kitchen underfoot when I'm trying to get things ready. So, and of course, that's where everyone always congregates. So it was a challenge.
We used to have regular trees every year. We used to go get Christmas trees, and then maybe about 35 years ago we got an artificial tree, and we put that up for quite a while, and then Dad helped with that, and then of course he's no longer with us anymore, but we've done that for a while, and then we stopped doing that because it probably wasn't easier, you know, for them as they got older and stuff. And lately we put up decorations and things, but we got one of them fiber optic trees that, you know, you turn it on at night and it sort of glows, and you know, it looks pretty Christmassy, I guess. I don't really do entertaining as such. We go to my brother's house on Christmas, and I remember Christmases past when Mother used to entertain at home, or back when my grandparents were alive, we used to go there either on Christmas or Thanksgiving. Of course, my dad always liked to have Christmas at home when we could. Then, you know, I suppose as Mother got older, she got tired of having to do all that because it's a lot of work and things. It's a lot of work to prepare things for Christmas, but it's always fun for those who go to these things. But it probably is not, I'm sure it's not very much fun for the ones that have to do all the work.
In the Charleston household, because we live out here on the East Coast, and both Kim and I, all of our family lives out on the West Coast, we've grown accustomed to having fairly small Christmases. But we make a real point of decorating the house. We go to a local place we've been going to for the past 10-15 years, I guess, for a Christmas tree. We always get a live balsam fir, about 6 feet tall or so, real full and all that kind of fun stuff. Strap it onto the top of the car and pray that it has all its needles on it by the time you get it home, and put it up in the Christmas tree stand, carefully doing the balancing act so the whole thing doesn't go tipsy-turvy. Buy some extra greens for on top of the mantle, and a nice fresh wreath on the front door, because I love the smell of Christmas. Maybe that's because I was raised out in Oregon, and you know, that's one of those places where all the Christmas trees are grown to be shipped around the country. But I can't imagine an artificial Christmas tree in my home. I pay extra for the smell, and that's not something you can get out of a spray bottle. So I enjoy doing that. I enjoy, well, I cook two or three meals a week here at the house, and we go out quite a bit. The best meals to cook are holiday meals, because you get to cook everybody's favorites. You get to cook things that you don't cook every day, so there's a little special to that part of things. I kind of lay down the law that the night before a major holiday meal, that's my prep night, and we get Chinese takeout or something like that so that we're not dirty in dishes and I'm not having to deal with all that, and then we start the cooking process. In fact, like you, Sue, I have to chase people out of my kitchen. I'm having a good time in there. I'm not feeling at all as if something is being imposed upon me. But I'd really like to enjoy it without having to defend myself and my kitchen space at the same time. All, I think, in fun holiday spirit. The worst part of that whole scenario is the day that all the greenery has to find its way out the front door without losing all of its needles on the carpet and requiring that you vacuum four or five times in one day. I love entertaining, usually not on a grand scale, but more three or four friends coming over to share Christmas. We try to make sure that those who are single have an opportunity to come and enjoy a small family gathering and feel part of the whole process. Thank goodness for a guest room, because that's usually the time that is most used is during the holidays, bringing people in to enjoy their company, and hopefully they enjoy ours.
Well, one thing that I did last year, just to make sure that everything was spiffy, since it was our first Christmas, is I paid someone to come in and do a really good cleaning for me the day before, and, you know, polish the mirrors, and if there was any marks on the wall, you know, things that we don't see, and usually sighted husbands don't see them either. But then I felt like I was prepared. You know, the windows were nice, and so maybe it's not a big deal, but it made me feel a little more prepared and took one element of stress off of me.
That's an excellent, excellent idea. I'll have to try to. I have a housekeeper that comes for maybe 2 or 3 hours every other week, specifically to look after those things that somehow or other sighted people don't notice in my house, but I'm pretty sure is happening, like marks on the wall near light switches and you know, smudge on glasswork and those kinds of things. So they help out quite a bit in that regard. It's nice to have the luxury of enough of an income to be able to afford that as part of my lifestyle. And it does make a big, big difference. I also, if I can share a quickie little story, you were talking about entertaining. One of the most entertaining things I can remember happening in the past few years was we were out Christmas shopping. Kim, who my wife, who's totally blind, and myself, our two guide dogs, and our friend Vicky, who rents an apartment from us here in our home, what they call an in-law apartment. Anyway, we were off shopping and then stopped by a local restaurant for dinner, and we got impatient waiting for the bill. So my wife jumps out of the booth there and says, "Well, you guys wait for the bill. I'm just going to go down to the local liquor store and pick up a bottle of Bailey's." We like a little nip of Bailey's now and then during the holiday season. So she slips out of the restaurant. And the check doesn't come, and the check doesn't come. And finally, our friend Vicky said, "Well, I'm really uncomfortable letting Kim be out there in the car by herself, so why don't you go out and I'll stay here and pay the bill?" So I get up and I go out, and I didn't hear Kim talk about stopping by the liquor store. So I stop by the liquor store and go in and buy their biggest bottle of Bailey's. And by the time we got to the car laughing ourselves silly over the fact that we now have enough Bailey's for four Christmases, and what the opinion of the liquor store clerk must be of all these blind guide dog users coming by to buy up all their Baileys.
Yeah. Gosh, we'll be there soon. Baileys is excellent in coffee, particularly at this time of year. Yeah, we're very much in the same mode as the Charleston household. We have this nice, lovely wreath on our front door that is all fresh pine. We've actually got our Christmas tree up, and it's about 7 feet tall, and it has lights on it now, and it has ornaments on it now, and Cheryl's done a really nice job of decorating some other components of the living room. So our house is very festive and very Christmas-like at the moment. So it's very nice, and I think, like Brian, I've had an artificial tree and have sort of dealt with that, but I think overall I probably think that the smell, particularly for blind folks, makes having a regular tree a worthwhile kind of exercise. It's really a pretty cool thing to do. Does anyone else want to talk about decoration tips and entertaining tips?
I didn't have anything about decorations or anything, but I do love Bailey's. I get it no matter what time of year it is. Another one of my favorites is peach tree schnapps, which, because I don't like, regular alcohol like beer, I like the ones with a good flavor. Anybody have a source for the chocolate-covered cherries? But not only the regular chocolate-covered cherries, but the ones which have brandy in it. I understand that they do sell those, but I've never been able to find the ones that actually have brandy in the chocolate-covered cherries.
Ooh, let us know when you find out where they are. I know you get a lot of that stuff up in Canada, but I don't know about here. Paul, one thing I wanted to mention just before we get off, if people didn't have a chance last Sunday on Marlena's show, which she does on Mainstream, Marlena Lieberg, she interviewed vendors, blind vendors, for the Christmas things that they were selling. And she did it last year, and she had 3 vendors. This year she had 8, like Speak to Me was on there, Blind My Smart, Debbie Hazelton. And each of the persons that came on offered a special, and then gave their website and their phone numbers. I'm not sure the show is archived yet, but there was a lot of good information and things that you might want to consider for putting under the tree.
Was that the stocking stuffers that was put on by AccessibleWorld.org with Bob Acosta and Pat Price? That is archived, and they had some neat stuff in there. There was stocking stuffers, like APH was on there. I really, really liked the presentation about the Zeitgeist talking time machine, but that's the one I'm thinking of, the stocking stuffers presentation, and it went 2 weeks.
No, I'm talking about Marlena Lieberg does a show on ACB Radio on Sundays from 5 to 7 Pacific time, and this last show, the last Sunday, was featuring vendors.
Yeah, I heard the program. I didn't hear it when it was live. I heard it Monday, but as a replay. But it was an interesting program. Of course, the one he's talking about, stocking stuffers, I heard some of that too, and that's been interesting. The one from Speak to Me, Denise Russell, I was inquiring about the talking microwave. It wasn't on their site. I called there, and then they said that she heard that they were going to discontinue it. One person said they were going to discontinue it, and then because she didn't have any more, and then the other one said that they weren't, and then I asked her how much it cost there. Maybe, I don't know if I should have done it that way, but I asked, she said $163, something like that, and I said something like, well, I probably was wrong to do it, but I said Walmart was selling them for $79, and she says she's not Walmart. Well, that's true. That's true. I mean, those folks probably don't, that's why they charge more, I guess.
It's quite a price increase. I don't understand why it would be that much more, especially if nothing else comes with it.
Well, I guess I heard the tail end of something that Steve Garris said, that he said that, I don't know, was it a CD was supposed to come with it? I mean, he said the same thing, that he's not Walmart, but he said that you get a CD or some, maybe you get a user manual with it or something like that, that you don't get if you get it at Walmart, maybe, I don't know.
Well, it's no different than when you shop at a little mom-and-pop store and buy a TV versus going to, Best Buy's. I mean, Best Buy's can buy 100,000 TVs and mom-and-pop can buy 10.
Exactly, and to some degree, I do. Again, I have the luxury, because I'm a two-income household without kids, that I can make philosophical decisions as to where I buy things, support small retailers as opposed to big chains. And I have to be honest with you that me and Walmart, we don't get along politically at all. So I tend to stay away from those kind of establishments, pay a little bit more of a premium for it. And in this particular case, you'd be not only purchasing an accessible device, but supporting a blind-owned business, which has its advantages as well.
That's a good point, Brian. Yeah.
I think the other point that I would make is we do pay a price, I think, sometimes for people gathering together in one place products that are specifically accessible for folks who are blind or visually impaired. And we ought to, I think, be prepared to pay that price sometimes. And I think the reason is that not only are they blind-owned businesses sometimes, but even when they're not, these are folks who, particularly at this time of the year, spend an awful lot of their money to have on hand the things that they think we might want to buy. And there are a lot of those places, if they guess wrong, who are going to end up being stuck with lots of product that they're probably not going to be able to return and may not find it easy to sell. And I guess I really respect and value the opportunity that those folks offer to us. The other cool thing is virtually every one of them has an 800 number, and when you call those places, you're actually almost always going to get to talk to somebody who is going to be really knowledgeable about what their product will do and what it won't do. And of course, as someone has already suggested, you also usually get some sort of accessible manual so that you as a blind person can get the information on how that product works pretty easily and comfortably. Holiday sales and returns. Maybe we can spend a minute talking about that. How do people handle returns if they do? Do you tend to go pretty soon after Christmas? Do you try to make a decision about what you want to exchange the stuff for before you ever get there? Or do you just kind of take your chances?
Well, one of the things that we do on that morning when all the presents get opened, and traditionally we do it Christmas morning, is we have a Braille writer in the living room. So when somebody gets a clothing gift, it's tried on almost immediately. It's determined it fits or it doesn't fit. The receipt that we hope is in the bottom of the box is quickly brailled and set aside with that item so that we know that receipt goes with that item for the time that it's time to go back to the stores and make the exchange. I think that's the only concession I make as a blind person to that whole process, I think, is making a point of Braille labeling receipts, both when I give things and when I get things.
Other thoughts about returns from anyone?
Well, I've never done Braille receipts. I probably should do that. That would probably make a lot of sense, but it always seems to be a bit of frustration, at least for me, to have to take something back that if I didn't want it or don't fit or something, if I had a duplicate of something that I already bought or something like that, or someone else got me, that can be a bit of frustration to have to return that stuff.
Well, one of the things we do is list, and I hope that people would get me what's on my list, and I personally ask people, please don't get me clothes, because I have a hard time finding things that fit right and use it to styles they like, I don't like, so we've tried to convince our family over the years, please, please, don't give us clothes. John won't take anything back. I mean, the other problem with the stores now, a lot of times they won't give you money back. They'll say, well, okay, you have a credit, and then you have to figure out a way to spend it. So then you got the problem all over again.
Yeah, and that was actually one of the things that I wanted to get to, that if you're going to return something, you're almost never going to get money back for it. You're going to get store credit, and so that was why I asked whether people actually made a decision about what they might want to exchange with for elsewhere. It's a good idea, by the way, if you're buying stuff for relatives who are in various parts of the country and you do want to buy clothes, that you use one of the large chains and that you actually, I think, in spite of maybe reservations to the contrary, actually include the receipts for the products that you've purchased. It's an interesting kind of ethical question, and there are a lot of people who say you shouldn't include the receipts because people aren't supposed to know how much a given present might have cost. But I think the advantage of making it available to return outweighs the disadvantage of actually letting people know how much or, conversely, how little you spent on them. Do people have opinions about whether you should include receipts with gifts of clothes or things that might potentially want to be returned? Yes or no?
I'm really familiar with that issue. It's probably a good point. But anyway, usually the receipt is not necessary. I've never run into a situation where it was. You leave the tag on the item. And do not cut the tag off the item then the person can return them and the receipt is not necessary. I would personally, in answer to your question, I would not ever leave a receipt in a package, and I go great lengths to make sure that there is no price tag on anything I send or give to somebody. If I can't remove it, then I usually take a pen and just go across it and know that I've crossed it out, but usually remove them. And again, like I say, if you just leave the tag on the garment, then it's returnable.
Well, I don't think that if were I to send something to somebody, I wouldn't want to leave the price tag on something for them to see. You know, I wouldn't want to leave the, if I was sending a gift that way, I wouldn't want to leave the price tag on.
Well, our family is a little more pragmatic, I guess, and that is that, generally speaking, if it's something that might need to be returned, like a clothing item, we'll include the receipt in a sealed envelope in the box. The only time that they ever worry about the receipt is if they do need to return it, and we're not at all embarrassed by that. We do remove price tags from the clothing, not other tags, but price tags from clothing so that it's not staring you in the face, but it gives you that option to return it. One other thing I'd like to put on the agenda for discussion, Paul, is since we're sounding awfully materialistic in all of this, is some of the ways that we've done gifts that weren't quite so commercial. I love giving gifts that I had some part in. So baked goods and those kinds of things are one type of gift that I enjoy giving, assuming the holiday season allows me to do that kind of thing. The other is to donate to a worthy cause in the name of somebody. I actually enjoy those kind of gifts quite a bit. Here in Massachusetts, for the first time, I heard of a gift fair where entities who provide services to the community give you an opportunity to come by and buy some small token and make a donation in the name of that individual, and you give that as your gift. So if you're not so sure that somebody needs yet another egg poacher, another collection of refrigerator magnets that you can't live without, you might be able to show them the honor of gifting them, but gifting them by helping somebody else out who really does need that kind of material goods.
That's a good point. Do people have other ideas of maybe some more altruistic ways of giving gifts or of shopping for gifts?
As far as the shopping for gifts, sorry, this still sounds materialistic again, but there's a lot of bazaars, a lot of things that are put on by different charity organizations, and they have gifts that are certainly more intimate in that they're not chain store gifts, and that's kind of a neat place to sort of look around and find different things to shop, and you're supporting something at the same time that can believe in, and I'll give somebody a gift is maybe a little more unusual than what you would find in a store. And I fully agree with you, Brian, too, as far as the making of things. That's my favorite thing is as a crafter. For me, buying a gift, I do it, but it just doesn't, it feels like something is absolutely missing when I create it and give it. It's part of me that's been given as well, so I certainly can do that.
That's the most practical approach, I think. I wonder how it is, like, if you can't think of somebody, something to get somebody, I wonder if just giving them some money that might be a practical way to go.
Gosh, Gary, I don't know whether I should have an opinion or not, but I guess I would say that for me anyway, if I can avoid doing that, I probably will, just because I think that so many people have the feeling when they receive money at Christmas time, I think, that this was the easy way out for the person. They didn't have to think very much about who I was and what I wanted and what they know about me. Obviously, the money comes in handy, and it's nice to have, and it's nice to be able to choose what you want. But I think overall, I like being, speaking for myself, I like being surprised by things that people have gone out and looked for that they think I would like. I think just giving money or deciding not to do Christmas are both options that I think lessen the kind of impact of joyousness and spontaneity that for me is such an important part of holidays.
I generally agree not to give money. The only time that I've chosen to do otherwise is when somebody had expressed over the course of the previous year that they were going on a special one-time vacation, or they were saving up money and hadn't made it quite there yet to buy some large item that I couldn't afford to buy them outright, and instead I gift money toward getting them over the top to where they could buy that item. It might be a chair or a bed or, like I say, a vacation that they've been saving up to so that they can do something a little bit more elaborate than they'd otherwise be able to. But that's the only time that cash ever is sent by this household to anybody as a gift.
Let's go one more quick round of any final thoughts that anyone might have about things they would like other blind folks to know about the holiday season and how we interact with it. Any final thoughts, and then we will wrap this evening's program up.
One thing that we do in my family, as a family with two blind people in it, but frequently with sighted people as part of the Christmas experience, is all of the presents that we put under the tree have Braille labels on them so that a blind person can help participate in passing out the presents come Christmas morning. Not standing back and being passive, but to be actively involved in that whole process of everybody's had one present. Let me see if I've got another one for Uncle Joe or for Vicky or whomever. So we enjoy making Christmas an accessible event in our household in that way.
One thing that I've heard about from a friend of mine, she has a lot of people that help her during the year, you know, maybe do her mail, or she doesn't pay them. But at Christmas time, then she gets a catalog from Hershey's, and I guess Hershey's makes these Christmas towers of different sizes, and so she makes sure that everyone who's helped her during the year, she sends them a Hershey tower, which I think is a nice gesture and shows that you've thought of someone.
Back when we were kids, when I was growing up, and my brothers and I were still at home, at my dad, you know, He just thought he'd do something funny, you know, well, it wasn't really a dirty trick. It was kind of a fun trick in a way. He gave me a flashlight for Christmas, and we all thought it was kind of a funny thing, but one of my aunts thought it was a terrible thing that he would do to a blind person, but it was, I mean, we all thought that it was quite funny. I mean, I really enjoyed it, you know, even though I knew that he knew that I couldn't see it. But he just gave me a, you know, just sort of a fun gift, you know, just to give me to see what I got a kick out of it, you know.
Yep, the traditions are certainly interesting. I think that at least from my perspective, the one thing that I'm looking forward to this Christmas, and the one thing that I think will be different is being able to spend some really quality family time with our daughter Hannah, and after Christmas perhaps with our older daughter and our new grandbaby, which will be kind of interesting. But the nice thing about that is we'll probably end up doing several Christmases, and because there are two of us in the household who are blind, you can be sure that we'll be doing a pretty fair amount of making gifts accessible so that we know which is what and what belongs to whom. But that's really a good idea, Brian. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for your participation in this spontaneous program on adapting the holidays to make them blind friendly. I appreciate all of your suggestions and all of your ideas, and I look forward to the opportunity of seeing you next week on Tuesday Topics, when we will have a real live guest who will enlighten us about some exciting and perhaps esoteric topic. So, on behalf of all of the other participants in this evening's show, this is Paul Edwards in Miami, Florida, saying good night. Thanks for tuning in to Tuesday Topics on ACB Radio, the voice of the blind community.
To participate in the recording of Tuesday Topics, we invite you to join us on Tuesday evenings in the U.S. at 9 p.m. Eastern. That's Wednesday, 1 hour Universal Time. The program is recorded in the Our Place Politics chat room at ourplace.acbradio.org. The first time you enter the chat room, the software will automatically download and install on your computer. All you need is a microphone that is plugged into your computer sound card. A few minutes before each show begins, those online will be happy to assist with audio checks and to answer questions about the chat room service and how it works. An announcement promoting the topic to be discussed will be emailed to the ACB Radio Friends list early each week. So we hope you will come and join us Tuesday each week when Tuesday Topics is being recorded. Again, the URL is ourplace.acbradio.org.